thank you to our sponsors, Digital Magic the Gathering Online Card Specialist, CardHoarder.com, and MTGOTraders.com. And also thank you to our paper magic specialist, GondaPlaid.com, along with Cape Fear Games, a online card store and brick-and-mortar card store. You can find us each week on MTGCast.com, StarCityGames.com, TCGPlayer.com, MyMTGO.com, and MTGSalvation.com. Hello and welcome, everybody. This is a very special, very lovely Monday Night Magic episode 201. That just does not have the same ring as episode 200. And this also will not be the chaos that was the live episode 200. We're keeping it real here. Me and Eric are going to bring you a fantastic show all about Rise of the Eldrazi. Eric,
and probably with better sound quality.
Yes. So everybody that made it through that one, we appreciate it. Happens about once a year. I agree, it's worth sacrificing the audio quality for that one episode because it's just absolute mayhem in that chat window. You see stuff fly by, like, what did I just... That sounded really dirty, but you can't pay attention to it anymore. So
those shows are a lot of fun. And if you did not get a chance to participate live in episode 200, stay tuned at least for, say, episode 250. And, maybe sometime sooner, but probably definitely at 250. And you should join in.
Yeah, it's kind of a tradition where we probably will keep it going. And something I had some people ask is if we give a little bit of a summary of the show before we start so people know what to listen for. We'll be going over Rise of the Eldrazi previews, Grand Prix Houston, a bunch of stuff about regions and the Wizard Play Network Championships. I've actually been playing some MTGO again. Oh. We have a little bit of MTG Cast news, listener emails, and at the end we'll have our movie talk because I have both a B-movie recommendation, which is, and this movie is the longest title I think I've ever heard. It's The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, is the name of it.
Which is a classic.
Yes, if you haven't seen this one, that's why we'll talk about it. Then actually I have a new movie recommendation for the end of the show, and that's Hot Tub Time Machine. Because this movie was phenomenal, and we're going to talk about it.
You're going to have to convince me.
Oh, I promise I can convince you, because I went in with pretty low expectations to that one, and I came out, my wife came with me, and a buddy of mine, and we were all just like, wow, that movie was fantastic. Okay. And not just because of John Cusack. He was good, but he was not the reason it was so good. But this is not Monday Night Movies, this is Monday Night Magic, Eric. I'm a little disappointed there that you didn't get me back on track. I gave you all this credit before the show about keeping me on track, and... here I'm talking about Hot Tub Time Machine.
Well, there's two things. One, it was early, and two, it was actually something I was interested in.
Once you start getting into any sort of discharge, Tom, that's when I'll make you get back on track.
Exactly. Hey, what about those row previews?
Yeah, so I actually wrote down a bunch of things about this. We've talked about this in the last few episodes. This is by far the most excited for a set I have been in a long time.
Well, I am starting to get more worked up about it as time comes and it's starting to get closer. It's starting to pique my interest. Some of the latest levelers that they've released have looked pretty good. And, those planeswalkers. Those planeswalkers are sweet.
Yeah, so let's start off the planeswalkers here. So Eric, tell me about the two planeswalkers, and I have a couple of comments about them.
Okay, so the first planeswalker I want to talk about is Sarkhan the Mad. Sarkhan the Mad. First planeswalker without a positive ability. So this guy is going down. His casting cost is 3, a red, and a black. He is a 7 loyalty planeswalker. His 0 ability is basically Dark Confidant. Reveal the top card of your library, put it into your hand, and he deals damage to himself.
Oh,
not you.
Because he's mad!
And it's equal to its converted mana cost. Then he has a -2 ability, which is target creature's controller sacrifices it. Then that player puts a 5/5 red dragon creature token with flying onto the battlefield. And finally, his -4 ability is each dragon creature you control deals damage equal to its power to target player.
Now, Eric, have you actually looked at the art for this card?
Yes, he's mad.
Have you seen Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom?
Yes,
I
have.
The priest at the end when he reaches into that guy's chest and goes, Kalima? That's exactly what this art looks like.
It's been a while, but the whole hand, if it was glowing, it'd be there.
Yes. That's the first thing I thought when I saw this card.
That's because you're a movie buff.
Now, what do you think of them, obviously trying to explore some different, I guess, design space for planeswalkers with this set in general, but what do you think about not having a plus ability? Does that bum you out? What do you think?
No, I mean, think about a Johnny Vengeant. Johnny Vengeant, most of the time he came into play Lightning Helix something, and then somebody attacked him and killed him. So oftentimes the fact that he had a plus ability in Ultimate didn't matter at all, and people were just playing him for the Lightning Helix. One of the reasons sometimes people would only hit the plus ability one time so they could Lightning Helix twice. And so, I mean, there's something right there. I mean, the thing is that, one, he has a decent way to draw cards in a red and black deck, which is nice because they don't find a lot of basically just draw a card spells in those decks. I love the flavor where he actually is hitting himself with the Dark Confidant ability. That's just sweet because it's great. And the fact that he can make 5/5 dragons, I mean, even though it's a -2, even though it's a minus ability, he's protecting himself. So you make a dragon, unless they send, you know, more than one guy, a couple guys, and you're probably going to eat at least one of the guys they send. You know, he's eating their guys and he's putting out a 5/5 flyer. So that's some serious stuff. And, the fact that he doesn't have a plus doesn't bother me. You know, it's a lot easier to play four of this guy than it is some other Planeswalkers because he's going away, so you know you'll be able to cast the other ones.
The one thing I thought, when people saw this card, I just imagined, like, Jund players salivating with Sprouting Thrynax and this guy coming out, you know, eating the Thrynax to get 3/1s and then a 5/5 dragon token. I almost wish they would have gave him 8 loyalty power so he could at least make 2 dragons and then do his ultimate ability. It was a little weird that the 2 abilities are a -2 and a -4. I guess he can be doing damage to himself, which is going to alter the number of loyalty counters on him. And I think 8 would have been a little strong.
I think if he got to make 2 dragons and then nuke somebody for 10 points, I think that may have actually pushed him over the level that it is. I mean, you know, Wizards, they like to push things. They probably tried him out that way and probably found that he was a little bit too strong. That's my guess. And it doesn't bother me that he only gets to make 1 dragon. If you really want to use the quote-unquote ultimate on him, you're probably playing a deck with other dragons anyway.
Like Broodmate Dragon, perhaps.
Yeah,
he likes Broodmate Dragon.
Oh, yeah. You make a dragon first turn, you get 2 Broodmate dragon and token next turn, and then hit someone for 13.
Yes, I thought that was
that's
pretty
assuming
tasty.
Your 5/5 doesn't attack, yeah. So that's pretty sweet. But, I mean, the folks, I mean, he's nice, but, I mean, his price is still in the reasonable range opposed to the astronomic. That cannot be said of Gideon Jura.
So the first thing I put this in the show notes, but I almost wish they would have put an extra M and an L in there so his name would be an anagram for Rules Migraine.
Yeah. Although I don't know how much of a Rules Migraine he is. What I think, though, is that he's definitely sweet. I mean, so for 5 mana, 3 mana and two white, you're getting a Planeswalker Gideon. He has a +2 ability. During target opponent's next turn, creatures that player controls attack Gideon Jura this turn, or if able. So you say, you're in a duel, and you say, all your guys are going. So if you already have a superior board position, you're going to go ahead and make some very favorable trades.
Yeah.
If you're trying to survive another turn to do an alpha strike, well, they may nuke Gideon, but you know that's going to be it's still a plus in your there. If he survives, his -2 ability is destroy target tapped creature. So if he survives and something that attacked him survives, well, you can kill that too. And then the really odd thing is it looks like his ultimate is a 0. Until the end of turn, Gideon Jura becomes a 6/6 human soldier creature that's still a planeswalker. Prevent all damage that would be dealt to him this turn.
Oh, and all the judges just grab their heads and be like, oh.
Nah, I don't think so. I think this one's a pretty simple to
can
parse.
Can people attack a tapped planeswalker? The only reason I asked that was on Aaron Forsythe's Twitter feed. He's like, yes, you can attack him if he's tapped.
I don't see why not. He's a planeswalker. And by the turn that turn, he's still a planeswalker. You know, now if he was tapped himself, he wouldn't be able to attack. But, you know, yeah, I don't see the problem. Maybe I'm just an old hardened veteran that can no longer see the problems of the new man. So send me an email if you think I'm out of touch.
But I do have to give credit. The artist, again, is Alexi Brisklot, I guess is how you say the last name. Or Briscott, I thought. I swear it was.
I think it's Briscott.
Briscott, okay, that's what I thought. But again, it's continuing the power trip that is of doing the art for a lot of the different Planeswalkers. So kudos to that person.
And it is some sweet art. So, I mean, he's another very powerful Planeswalker. Oh, he starts with 6 loyalty. So if he comes down and he uses plus ability, that's 8 loyalty. Somebody has to do 8 points of damage to him to be able to get rid of him. That's a lot, seeing as you probably already have some dudes on the board that you're going to be able to block with or do some other stuff with. So.
Now, Eric, like, what kind of deck do you see this going into? Do you see this going to, say, like a blue-white control deck where they're always wrathing, they're having lots of, you know, creature destroy effects where they want to wipe the board, then attack with Gideon? Is this going in as a 5-drop for, say, like the white weenie or these white, blue, white, red aggro decks so they can open the board up for their alpha strike? Where do you see Gideon going?
The place I've heard of is Planeswalker Control, where you team him up with like either Elspeth or Jace, the Mind Sculptor, because he is perfectly positioned to help your Jace survive. And he also, you know, with Elspeth, you know, she makes blockers that you can use if you're able to fire off her ultimate and whatnot. You know, you're never being attacked again for damage and things like that. So that's where I've heard him being used. You know, it definitely makes sense to me that he's going to find himself more in a control type of deck than a, you know, all-out attack deck. But, I mean, if he's going to be the upper end of your attack deck, I mean, his +2 ability is still great there to be able to force through your last bits of damage. So obviously people have plans for him. I'm not the great planner. I'm just the guy who's frowning because his pre-order price is already out of my price range. So I'm just going to have to crack a couple.
What is the current going price for him? I'm pulling up Star City Games right now to see what the thoughts are.
I think their pre-orders were in the 30 something neighborhood.
Oh, yep. $35. Yep.
And, I mean, predictions are he's going to hit the Elspeth range, which was about $40. So
people complain about the prices of old cards, but it's a very new world where Magic sets come out and there are already $40 or $50 cards.
Well, and that really goes to the, when Magic first came out, or when they first came out with Mythics, they were saying that, you know, you weren't going to have tournament staples in the Mythic rarity. And that is obviously not the case. So, you know, the trade-off for them was, do you make crappy mythics or mythics that only appeal to Timmy, or do you make mythics that are going to have some wow factor? And apparently they decided that the wow factor was more important than the affordable mythic piece. I mean, you're looking at one or two cards that are obnoxiously expensive each set. The other side, just to rehash the old argument, is that with the smaller set sizes, that the rare cards are actually more affordable. Like if you look at the dual manlands, which fell in the rare slot, I mean, they are highly affordable. And if you haven't gotten your play set of those yet, you definitely should, because they're well worth it. The same with the sac lands. You know, those were once again in the rare slot. So at least your mana bases, although expensive, you can actually afford to buy some, opposed to spending $200 for a playset of a card.
And you kind of brought up more the big showy kind of, you know, blow your pants off of you mythic rares. What are your thoughts on, we got the uber legendary Eldrazi now, we got Emrakul. What are your thoughts on this guy?
He's big.
Like I want to marry him and move in with him. I'm assuming it's a him. I guess you don't know. Eldrazi's could be androgynous.
I need to pull up the picture to know.
It looks
for sure.
Like a floating mount.
I'm not as quick on the. I don't think that you have a gender associated with this.
It's officially an it.
Yeah, it's definitely an it. So I think the first thing that you think of when you see Emrakul is, wow, 15.
But isn't that cool though to see a card with that high of a casting cost? I'm obviously a casual player, but that just made me excited.
You know, yeah. I mean, the first thing you see when you think of 15 is that this is just not ever going to be cast. And then with his normal Eldrazi, put him back in the grave. You know, put him into the library from the graveyard, or shuffle your graveyard into your library. You're not reanimating him. So, but I mean, I guess we should go through the whole text of him here. He costs 15 colorless. He is a legendary creature, Eldrazi.
Woo!
Emrakul, the Aeon's Torn can't be countered. So at least if you're spending 15 mana, you're going to get to resolve the spell.
I think that's pretty important, actually.
Yes, I have to agree. Then, once he's in play, when you cast Emrakul, take an extra turn after this one. So even if for some reason he doesn't resolve, like someone uses Time Stop and ends your turn before he comes into play, you still get an extra turn. So that's always a bonus. Spending 15 for an extra turn, you're basically just replacing the one you just lost, but okay. But then flying, protection from colored spells, Annihilator 6, and then the whole shuffle the graveyard if he goes into the graveyard into your library. So if you resolve him, you know, from casting him, he effectively has haste, right? Because you're going to get another turn. You're going to get to attack with him, and they're not going to terror him. You know, there are no colored spells that are going to wipe him out, so you don't have to worry about instants, you know, coming in and whacking him on the head. And he has Annihilator 6, so one swing from this is pretty much going to wreck your opponent, and you're going to get to swing. So you get a lot for the 15. I don't know that he's going to make a competitive impact, but you get a lot for your 15.
Yeah,
look at him at an EDH table near you.
That's what I mean, because, I mean, people are... And in EDH, he's interesting because I'm going to use he, whatever, I don't care. He is huge. Some people have claimed that it may be sort of boring for EDH, or if he comes out into play, in some ways the games may end quickly, but still. And also really pushes the design of EDH deck in some weird places where you can't play with any basic lands. So you are truly digging through your bins of weird, old, just janky, colorless mana lands.
Well, that's only if he's your general.
Yeah, I'm talking about as a general.
Yeah, and I don't know. Those old lands, I don't think they're all janky. You can actually... I've looked at the mana base when MTG Radio talked about a Karn Silver Golem deck two or three shows back. I went and pulled a gatherer search on all the colorless mana-producing lands, and there's a bunch. There's enough.
There's a lot of... I mean, people have already started talking about Hall of the Bandit Lord as being a good buddy for this guy, and the other Eldrazi legendary ones.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, there's a bunch of viable lands, and you know, you can use your Mind Stones and things like that to accelerate your mana. You know, so I mean, it's doable. It's just I don't know. I don't know that I'd use him as a general, but he seems like he'd be a fine cog in an EDH deck.
Now, Eric, you're very knowledgeable about Magic, so I actually have a quiz for you.
Okay,
are you ready? There are three other Magic cards that have a converted mana cost of 15. Can you name any of them for me?
Was Autochron Worm 16 or 17?
If you... actually, it was 15.
All right. So Autochron Worm, there's one. 15. Draco was 16, wasn't he?
Exactly. Draco was the most expensive casting cost Magic card.
So he doesn't...
I'm not counting the Infinity one, so...
Of course, yeah. Non-silver-bordered land, I take it.
Yeah, well, the other two ones that are 15 are both silver-bordered cards.
Okay, well then I'm probably not going to figure him off the top of my head. No, I'm just not as familiar with those. I probably own one of them, but go ahead.
You're right. The other two are the BFM, the Big Furry Monster, is actually 15 black manas, and then Mox Lotus.
Mox Lotus. I think I may have a Mox Lotus. So I have the what's the second one? Unhinged? Unglued?
Unglued. For those cards, let me pull it up here. So we have Big Furry Monster was in Unglued, and then the Mox Lotus is Unhinged.
Yeah, so I actually bought a box or two of Unhinged. So I very possibly have a Mox Lotus.
Well, yeah, you were with me. We did the kind of that combo draft with the Unhinged box.
Oh yeah. So 15's big, but have we talked about All Is Dust?
No, we have not. That one of our first colorless sorcery spells.
Oh, now that is a sweet card. So for 7 colorless mana, and it's a tribal sorcery Eldrazi. So rapidly you are approaching being able to get your Eldrazi deck going there in tribal, Tom.
Yes, I'm already very excited for that.
Each player sacrifices all colored permanents he or she controls. Now that is an awesome thing. And I think, I mean, it's kind of, I love how the art seeps through the frame on this one. It's kind of a bluish kind of looking card, but the art is, I think, Emrakul, just destroying a city. And the flavor text is just sweet. The flavor text is, the emergence of the Eldrazi isn't necessarily a bad thing, as long as you've already lived a fulfilling and complete life without regrets. Javard Nasirin, Undo Relic Hunter.
Yeah, it's hard. I think that actually may be Ulamog, actually, in the art. It's tough to see. It's not very big, but I think that's Ulamog, actually.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're actually right there. I said the wrong Eldrazi, the wrong mishmash of vowels and consonants. My mistake.
But no, but it still looks awesome. It has that bleed-through art that the other Eldrazis have, the colorless ones.
But I think where you see play is this falls play into the Akoma's Vengeance kind of camp. Although you can't cycle it, it blows up everything except for artifacts, which will be interesting how this plays with the next block. I'm kind of curious how much colored artifacts are going to be in the next block.
Just to kind of go along with this new theme of, we can have colorless non-artifact spells, we can now have truly colored artifact spells.
Well, I mean, obviously Esper was pretty much mostly colored artifact spells.
True.
So, you know, you kind of wonder, I mean, one of the things that they worry about when they do an artifact block, when they were talking about Mirrodin was, well, back when they were doing the design columns for that, Mark Rosewater was talking about a way to get, you know, colored cards into the set, or artifact cards that cared about color, so color was still relevant. Well, now they've just broken down and made colored artifacts, so, you know, I would imagine that they would reuse that for an artifact block.
And the other thing cool about all this dust, you know, obviously it's an Eldrazi, it's a tribal sorcery for them, but there's all these cool, we have the Eldrazi spawn cards for actually the colored spells. And we have the one, the new two black and one colorless one, the Pawn of Ulamog. And when they make these Eldrazi spawn creature tokens, those are also colorless. So you just imagine, you can say, you know, all to dust, everything gets wiped out, you get a bunch of Eldrazi spawn tokens, and then you're pooping out some huge monster Eldrazi to basically win the game the next 1 to 2 turns.
Yeah, it's those are pretty nice. And I do have to say that, what do I have to say?
You don't have to say anything.
I do have to...
Ooh, no, Eric, you don't have to say anything.
Oh, no, one of the things that I saw a tweet about was that there's two different levels of Eldrazi. There's your kind of badass colorless guys, and then there's kind of, you know, the lesser Eldrazi that are colored Eldrazi. And usually those lesser Eldrazi have those colorless spawn tokens associated with them. So,
yeah, well, basically we have the legendary Eldrazi, which are, you know, we have the three named ones. We have their different colorless sort of bigger ones. You know, these are 11, these are full Eldrazi. Then we have the Eldrazi spawn, which are the colored creatures that we've seen so far.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of cool that, obviously, when you're playing Eldrazi deck, you're likely to be playing at least some colored spells to go along with this, I'm assuming.
More than likely.
And then, in relate to all this talk about Eldrazi, Eric, we know we've known about the land Eldrazi Temple for a while, and this was the Star City Games preview. But what we just found out is what its rarity is. And frankly, I was pretty disappointed that they made this one a rare. I really feel they could have made this one an uncommon.
I am scrolling down to it.
This is the one where it taps for colorless mana, yeah, or it can tap for two to play Eldrazi spells or Eldrazi activated abilities. And since we haven't really seen Eldrazi activated ability, you know, keep your eyes out.
I think that you probably don't want it uncommon just for drafting. It makes whoever drafts the Eldrazi deck, if you pick up two or three of these in a draft, pick every Eldrazi you find and just smash face. I think that's the reason why you see it at rare instead of uncommon.
Okay,
going back to our rare, mythic, and cost factor, you know, you might see this, you know, go up in price some, but it's not going to be in your mythic price range. So that's a good idea, a good thing.
Yeah, because right now, actually, I just looked at the pre-order for Star City Games. It's $7.99 for the Eldrazi temples.
So if you think Eldrazi are going to be big, jump on that.
Yeah, but it's just for me as a player, because so far, obviously, when Wizard of the Coast makes sets, they want you to be excited for the rares or the mythic rares to buy it. But so far, right now, it really feels like most of the cards I'm excited for are rares or mythic rares because of the Eldrazi.
Yeah, but you know, one of the things is that they pretty much, when they show off their sets, you get a disproportionate number of previews that are rares and mythics. Like, by the time they're done previewing, you'll have seen every mythic in the set, and you'll have seen a bunch of the rares, and you've only seen a handful of uncommons and commons.
True. And can I actually make a casual player pick for a card that I'm excited for out of the set?
Yes.
I actually picked Angel Heart Vial, and I know this is not going to be making any constructed splash, I know, because it's probably one or two mana too much to cast, but Angel Heart Vial, it's 5 mana, artifact rare. Whenever you're dealt damage, you may put that many charge counters on Angel Heart Vial. Two and tap, remove four charge counters from Angel Heart Vial. You gain two life and draw a card. And it's not really the card itself that gets me excited, but a lot of casual players out there like to play these colorless with a red splash artifact decks that really try to abuse charge counters. And here's actually one of our new best tools for getting a whole load of charge counters on something that we can then move over to something else that's more useful.
Wasn't there a card from Mirrodin Block that was kind of similar, but you gained a life like each upkeep with it?
Sun Droplet was similar to it. This one I like because you actually can use it to get a card. And the same thing, where you're taking damage, you can get multiple charge counters on multiple cards. And there's so many cool cards that you can dismantle this thing onto. You have Darksteel Reactor, obviously, to win the game. Eternity Vessel, which is one of our new ones, which would be kind of fun if you get like 30 or 40 counters on that thing. Every time you play a land, you go up to 40. Everflowing Chalice would be a good one. Lightning Coils, you know, make like 15, 3-1 haste guys would be fun. Magistrate Scepter, where you basically would get 10 turns in a row for free.
I sense some deck construction there from Tom.
Yes, and then Riptide Replicator, because you get to pick the creature type. So I can make like 2020 oozes or 2020 imp creature tokens.
Hey, one thing I will say about this, it is kind of nice that you pull these things off like in four set chunks, you know? I remember one of the things with Sun Droplet was, you know, your Sun Droplet would have all of these counters on it and just tick off one every upkeep. And it was just so slow. I mean, this, you know, if you have a way to untap it, you can speed that up. You're getting some cards out of it, so that's nice, you know. So now its conversion rate is a lot lesser, so if you would get all the counters off of it, it's not going to be as good. And I'm pretty sure it's more expensive than the other, so.
Yeah, Sun Droplet is just two.
Yeah.
And Sun Droplet will also make you really, people in your EDH playgroup really angry because it can go off on each player's upkeep. So if you take like six turns, by the time it gets back to you, you've already gained six life again. You're like, yeah, it's a good card.
I may have a deck I want to put Sun Droplet in now that we start thinking about this.
Yeah, it is for a lot of people, because it's a colorless artifact, it's an EDH staple for many decks.
You know, the one I'm thinking of is Searing Meditation, which was a rare card from Ravnica, which whenever you gain life, you can spend two mana to shock something. I'm not sure if it's shock something or shock a player.
Yeah, you can do two damage to a creature or player.
Yeah, I got a deck with that. It's a nice card.
There you go. Yeah, Sun Droplet. Tech. So I have a couple more, Eric, but why don't you take the next pick? I have a few more that I could easily talk about.
Okay, well, I kind of want to talk about two, and that is the two levelers that kind of two level up guys who kind of say, maybe level up won't be as sucky as we thought it might be. So one is Student of Warfare.
Oh, okay.
For a single white mana, creature, human, knight. He looks like he's a rare. His level up is a single white, and he starts off as a 1/1.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me about a good card. Oh, I must have misheard you.
Whatever. levels two through six, he gains first strike and is a 3/3. So you play this guy on turn one, and then on turn two, he's now attacking as a 3/3 with first strike.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. And then, you know, should you get him up to level seven, he becomes a double striking 4/4. So that's not bad. You got spare mana laying around. You thunk it into him, and eventually he's attacking as a 4/4 double striking guy. So that's definitely doable. And the other one is Mike Flores's. Is it Flores's?
Flores's.
Yeah.
Brett Favre.
Kargan Dragonlord for two red, human warrior. Level up is a single red. He starts off as a 2/2. At levels 4 through 7, he's a flying 4/4. And at level 8 plus, he's a flying trample 8/8 with fire breathing.
His testicles descend at 8 plus. 8/8.
So, I mean, you know, it's going to take him a while to get where he's getting to, but I think you should read Mike's preview article. When he previewed him, you know, he's talking about the similarities this guy has to Figure of Destiny. I think his arguments are legit. The other thing is that traditionally Mike Flores gets tournament-worthy cards that spike in price, which was also disappointing. So, what can you say? In one regard, I spend money on Magic. On the other regard, I'm cheap. I always had a problem with spending money on singles.
He's currently $12.99 for a pre-order right now.
Yeah. Anyway, he's
a cool card.
He starts off as a 2-mana 2/2 that has with an upside. I mean, that's how he looks at it. So, I mean, I think both of those start to show where there's some promise for the level up mechanic. Now, so what do you got for me, Tom?
Eric, what do you? This is something that polarizes Magic players from like they love it to or they want to stab you in the neck if you even bring this up. And this is alternative win conditions. Well, we have another one.
Hit me.
Near death experience, 2 and 3 white enchantment. It's a rare, obviously. At the beginning of your upkeep, if you have exactly 1 life, you win the game. And it's kind of cool because on the art of it actually has Gideon, who is already sort of absorbing damage and doing weird shenanigans. So I thought that was a pretty good thing to do. But this is really a sign of the design space that the M10 rule changes brought up where we don't have mana burn anymore. So now they can do stuff like this that triggers off having a certain life total.
Yeah, no more mana burning at the end of your opponent's turn and going, oh, oops, I win. And that picture, was it Savor the Flavor that talked about... was that what revealed this card? I know Savor the Flavor had a story that kind of featured the artwork of this card. That was a pretty good read.
To be honest, I don't remember which one this came out, but I just got very excited whenever I see a new alternative win condition. And the more options you have in Magic, I feel like that's better.
Well, you know what I like about this alternative win condition? I kind of feel like it's one you could, as a casual guy, you can just kind of throw into a deck. And basically it says, you better make sure that you actually kill me, because if you miss, I'm winning.
Yeah, it's like, otherwise you better finish me off, otherwise I'm just going to sit here and turtle.
What else you got?
So the other one, some of these we're starting to get more into the uncommons part of the set, but they're still kind of cool cards. But every once in a while, we've talked about Creature Creep. Conley had a really good discussion about this about a couple of months ago. But every once in a while, they print a new card that just makes me sad because it, in a lot of ways, just obsoletes cards from when I started to play Magic. And the one that I saw is the Palaka Worm. This is the new green worm. Let me pull up his casting costs. You have to keep all these things straight. So it's 3 green and 4 colorless, uncommon worm. Trample, when he 7/7, when he enters the battlefield, you gain 7 life. If he's put into a graveyard from the battlefield, you get to draw a card. In my mind, still playing in beta, I still remember how the Craw Worm, at 2 green and 4 colorless was almost too good for a 6/4 trample. And now we're here right on 1 green mana, and we're getting a 7/7 that's giving you life, and it's trample. Clearly better than so many cards were in the beginning of the game. And now this is considered somewhat of a junk uncommon.
Well, and I think what it comes to speak to is when they started off the game of Magic, one thing most people enjoy doing is attacking and blocking. The vast majority of people enjoy combat. Now, the problem is that when they started off Magic, they unbalanced things more towards the spells. And so recently they've been trying to correct that. At least this is kind of what I get from their communications. And so this is what you get. You get for 7 mana, you get an immediate effect. You gain 7 life. That's nice. And then, you know what's probably the nicest part of this card, though? Trample.
Yeah, I mean, and it's nothing to sneeze at. A 7/7 trampler, especially in limited, is not too bad.
You know, and he also plays nice with Kalani Hydra
and Primal Crux. They're all going to move in and have an apartment together.
Yeah. So Kalani Hydra is 8 green for an 8/8 creature Hydra, but it costs 1 green less for each green creature you control. And he has trample. So what do you think when you see this guy?
And when I see this guy, this is why they should just take the art from the original Force of Nature and put it on this card. Because when I read this, this is what Force of Nature should have been. Big green monster likes to have green buddies around with trample, but doesn't get hosed if the other things die, and he's still just an 8/8 trample. And if you don't have anything out, he's still 8 green mana, which is now considered a fair cost for an 8/8 creature. With some sort of immediate ability, like trample.
Do you got anything else you want to talk about?
Eric's like, because I want to move on.
No, I want to. I mean, I'm always interested to hear other people's takes on things.
No, the other one, I'm excited to see where they're going with this Defender sub theme. I like playing, in my mind, Defender equals wall, and I like playing certain creature types, and that's exciting. And the reason that's really brought this up, we already have Overgrown Battlement, which a lot of people agree is going to be a very, very, very good green common. Oh, yeah. But along with this, so Overgrown Battlement, this is a green Akalis, creature wall, 0/4, defender, tap to add a green to your mana pool for each creature with defender that you control. And the one that came out that tickled my old cards that I've liked in the past was Vent Sentinel. 3 colors and a red, creature elemental, again, a common. So you could, there's definitely could be some interesting draft strategies growing out of this. Defender, it's a 2/4, so not terrible. One and a red, tap, Vent Sentinel deals damage to target player equal to the number of creatures of the Defender you control. This seems like the perfect card for a Defender-themed deck. Because your whole point is you just want to sit there, turtle down with all of your walls, and then you want to ping them at the end of their end step for like 4 or 5 damage. And this brings back when I used to play blue-red with Chainflinger. Sort of same thing, you just sat there, you know, behind your wall of counterspells, and you just eventually just ping them to death. Eventually you'd get Threshold, and you'd ping them even faster. And this guy's going to do it potentially doing 2, 3, 4 damage every time, which is nothing to sneeze at.
There have been many times that I have wanted to make a wall deck. And so I have acquired some Rolling Stones. I bet Tom knows what Rolling Stones does.
Yes, because basically it lets your I guess now it's a creatures with a defender attack.
Yes. Wall creature. Oh, no, only wall creatures. Wall creatures can attack as though they didn't have defender.
Really? I figured they would have changed it to creatures with... Okay, you're right. So I'm very happy that they at least made my 0/4 overgrown embattlement can now attack. That's good of them.
But it's for one colorless and a white. It's been 7th edition Stronghold and 8th edition. Rares and all of those. And the original text said, walls may attack as though they weren't walls. So
that's disappointing. I guess I may have been a little too strong, but still that's a little disappointing.
You know, I kind of like that because, you know, I still want it to be – you're still going to use it in your wall deck. I mean, you know, so I don't mind that it limits it to walls. I think the reason why they did it that way is they have a strong commitment to keep original functionality. So original functionality on this just did walls. So that's why.
But, you know, but overall I'm excited to see where they go with this. Is if they give us a few more decent commons, and we haven't even seen if we're going to have some sort of uncommon or even potentially a rare defender creature, it seems like it actually could be a fun different deck type to be playing either in standard or limited or otherwise.
Yeah, you know, there's got to be enough walls in limited to allow you to survive to cast your 15-15 for 15, even with acceleration. So I think that's a definite thing. Now, I'm starting to get more excited about the limited environment since I've seen more cards. I was worried about the expensive spells, and are you really going to – I mean, is it really going to let you cast it? You know, so I just need – I've started already adjusting my mindset to – a 2/2 for 2 is going to suck. A 2/2 for 2 is going to suck. Just ignore that and pick up the big Eldrazi.
Just because of potentially the presence of a lot of creatures with defender with assuming 4 big... I'm trying to get you to say something really dear to hear, Eric. But they have at least 4 more power or toughness, you know, so they have a 4 or bigger butt, if you will.
Yes. No, not going there.
I have my fingers steepled right now. I'm like an evil scientist. The experiment has been started. The lightning coils have started. There's the stack electricity's crackling. I'm just waiting to see if my monster comes to life.
Yeah, if you've been following now a bunch of the different limited articles, like limited information on the mothership and limited resources here on MTGcast, there people are already starting to hit it in is that, look, this set is going to be about slow, big guys who win you the game. So don't go into your pre-release expecting to build a fast beatdown deck. It's not going to work. When you play limited in this set, repeat this to yourself. Take the big monster. Take the big monster and put him in your deck and then put in the walls and put in your 5 casting cost removal and all the acceleration you have and play a control game and win the game that way. You're not going to win with your 2/2s for your you know, you're not going to win with your grizzly bears and your hill giants. It's not going to happen. So just remember that as you're going to your pre-release.
Wow, I'm looking at there's currently without Rise of the Eldrazi, there are 13 creature cards with Defender currently legal and standard. And right now it looks like white, blue, red would actually be a fairly potent mix. You have Wall of Reverence, Wall of Frost, Wall of Denial, which is just an enormous pain in the butt. You have Sanctum Plowbeast, the really good 3/6 Defender that can plane an island cycle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you got Guardians of Akraza. There's some good stuff here. Cool.
And I love me some planes and island cycling.
Yes, it is some good stuff. So that was just one of the other cards that I was excited about. The last one that I wanted to mention was Dreamstone Hedron.
Uh-huh,
Yeah. Simply because I saw a pretty good tweet about somebody saying they just took three Mind Stones and stapled them together.
This was, I think the person who tweeted that was...
I think it was
Kelly Diggs. Yeah.
So I just thought that was pretty good. Because, again, movie buff, I imagine them like sort of herding three Mind Stones into the transporter from The Fly with Jeff Goldblum, and then hitting the button on the other side, this steaming morass pile of artifact comes out. That's the Dreamstone Hedron.
I don't know if you saw the follow-up tweet from that about that. He said, stapling three lotus petals together was too good.
Wait a minute, that would be a black... No, we probably shouldn't. We can't print that, right, guys? Didn't we change our minds on that? Yeah, that's right. They'd get mad. Yep, Hasbro will be mad. Okay, we've changed it. Mind Stones, go. Pentad Prisms, there you go.
So, hey, there is one more card I want to get your take on. And that is, I think it has a pretty cool name. Splinter Twin. So for two colorless and two red, it's an enchantment aura. I believe it is a rare enchant creature. Enchanted creature has tap. Put a creature token, which is a copy of this creature, onto the battlefield. The token has haste. At the beginning of the next end step, exile it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, and Aaron Forsyth tweeted that they hinted that there's going to be, I think it's another red spell or red card in this set combined with Splinter Twin will win you the game.
No, it was going to win you the game before they fixed it.
Oh, okay. So I've been kind of waiting to see this.
He followed it up with a tweet that said, last time he saw the set, it was able to win you the game.
Well, that's too bad. But still, it's cool. Flavor-wise, I like the idea of this card going out, and I'm pulling up the art right now. And it kind of gives you that sort of the delay cards, kind of the same thing where you have kind of two sides to it. But it seems like fun. You're putting this potentially even on your defender creatures, anything that comes into play abilities. It seems like it's going to be a fun card.
Actually, the art to me reminded me a little bit of the whole Morphling cycle, except that they're facing away from each other instead of looking at each other.
Yeah, good point, actually. And the flavor text is pretty epic of, I know just the person for that job.
That is some nice flavor text. I like this. Oftentimes you cast a creature that you want to send into combat, but if you do, it's going to die, and then you're going to be sad. And now you don't have that problem.
No, and
now you just get two for one when they use removal on it.
Yeah, throw this on your Broodmate Dragon. You want to do.
Now that's sick.
And then your Sarkhan the Mad will be very, very happy. I still remember
I was thinking about him with Sarkhan the Mad. You send your guy into the battle zone, the red zone. Your twin goes into the red zone. If they don't kill it, well, Sarkhan just turns into a 5/5 dragon.
Yeah, when I first saw Sarkhan, Sarkhan the Mad, the new one, I was not excited, but just us talking on the show, though, I have sort of come around to it, where it's very good in a black-red sense, where he's all about being crazy mad, crazy from the Mercury, and he's just sacrificing, he's doing damage to himself, but usually to help you win the game while he's doing this.
I was just thinking, you can enchant Gideon with this.
When he's a creature, would it fall off, though, when he reverts back to being a planeswalker?
No, enchant, like you can enchant a, I don't know.
The man?
That's a good question. If you're a judge and listening to Monday Night Magic, please email us with the answer to, would this enchantment fall off of Gideon when he turns back into a planeswalker? Or when he returns to a non-creature planeswalker?
Planeswalker, thank you. My guess is yes, it would stay, because I think counters stay. If you put those on a land when they're a man land and it goes back to being a regular land, like counters would stay on it.
He doesn't have protection. The protection would knock it off, but yeah. That's an interesting question.
Yeah, so judges, I know some of you listen. I know you're yelling at your radio or your... nobody listens to us on the radio, so I'm not sure why I just said that. On your MP3 player, your iPod, whatever you're listening to, I know you're yelling. Bottle that in, go home, send me an angry email. Lonza has the right answer to this question, I don't care. My vote is it will not fall off.
Send it to Eric as well. Yeah. My vote is also that it won't fall off. Peter Jan, I know that you listen to us. And hopefully Ricky Hayashi, he also hopefully he listens as well. If not, hey Ricky on JudgeCast, maybe we should email JudgeCast with this question.
Oh, good idea. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Also on the MTGCast network.
Yes, because we will consume all. We are the legendary Eldrazi of the podcasting world.
Cthulhu.
All right, Eric. I think that was all the ones. I mean, there's so many good cards. We already have Momentous Fall. This is the greater good. as an instant, which a lot of people are very excited about. So far, we have a lot of really good cards. We're only up to 78 cards spoiled for the set, like with the basic lands.
Yeah, I think that at this point we can certainly go ahead and start getting into some of our other information.
Yes, because you can either color me or colorless me excited for Rise of the Eldrazi. So what do we have next? So Grand Prix Houston. Here we go, because Conley, this is why he's not here tonight. He is currently in Houston Grand Prix Extended. He actually did very well. He placed 25th. So he's winning some money. Gavin got 45th, again winning some money. But we do have to extend our congratulations to the numeral one winner, which is Adam Yurchik, playing the Dark Depths Vampire Hex Mage Thopter Foundry combo. That was a fairly popular deck in the tournament and also even in the top eight.
It's powerful.
Now, I have to share that Conley had some of the more interesting coverage on this, and he had a featured match. Eric, did you read his feature match? Otherwise, I'm going to summarize it for our listeners.
You summarize it, because I did not.
This was great. So Conley's one of the feature matches. I'll have a link in the show notes so you can read it entirely. But it's this really bizarre first game where Conley is, his opponent is playing the Hive Mind Pact of the Titan combo deck. And this is, I had heard a little bit of rumblings about this deck, but had not actually seen it being played or described. So this is his opponent's deck, is Hive Mind. It's an M10 rare, 5 and a blue, an enchantment. Whenever a player casts an instant or sorcery spell, each other player copies that spell. They don't have a choice. Each of those players may choose new targets for his or her copy. So what they do is, the player with this combo has a Hive Mind out in play, and they play for free Pact of the Titan. And they're assuming that their opponents are probably not playing decks with red. And if anybody doesn't know Pact of Titan, 0 mana, instant. It was a rare from Future Sight. It's a red spell. You get a 4/4 red giant token into play. Beginning of your next upkeep, you have to pay 4 and a red. If you don't, you lose the game.
And they usually play with like Pact of Negation as well. And maybe one of the other packs also.
Exactly, with Pact of Negation backup. So even if they potentially... I mean, it just gets wild where there's all these costs that they have to pay to not lose the game, and they just can't do that. And so that's what his opponent playing. Conley's playing this very interesting kind of white, blue, black, Spellstorer Sprite, Vanillion Click, Meddling Mage, Dark Confidant, really cool kind of fish essence deck to it. He said this is the most fishy deck he's played in a while. I believe is the exact quote on the Mothership site. So first game of this feature match, his opponent has played the Steam Vents, Red Blue Land. Conley, you hear Conley's, this sounds like Conley goes, are you playing Dragonstorm? The guy's like, I wish I was playing Dragonstorm. Conley's like, you are playing Dragonstorm until you can convince me you're not. Which sounds nice. sounds like something he would say. So basically the game's going, a Hive Mind comes out, his opponent plays Pact of the Titan. Conley then counters his copy of the Pact of the Titan. So he does not have to pay the mana. But his opponent has still cast it, so he has now gotten his 4/4 red giant creature token. Comes to Conley's turn, he then plays an Abyssal Persecutor, which he also has a 4 of in his deck. He then passes to his opponent. Yeah, Abyssal Persecutor. Abyssal Persecutor in play, and his opponent now has a Pact of the Titan token into play. Passes to his opponent. His opponent then draws a card. So he has now passes on tap, has passes up, keeps it down to his draw step. So Conley says, hey, you just lost the game because you didn't pay your Pact of the Titan cost. So his opponent scoops up his cards, and then I'm not sure exactly how it got pointed out, but it was realized that Conley had the Abyssal Persecutor in play, which means his opponent can't lose the game. But his opponent's already scooped up his cards, so a head judge was called over, and it was deemed that this was considered a concession by his opponent's portion because there's really no way to return to the original game state.
So I wonder what the exact wording that Conley used there was. Did he say you didn't pay your pact, or did he say you lose the game?
Well, basically just said you lost the game because you did not pay that cost. They had the exact quotes in the article, which I can try to pull up here quick. But it was a very interesting, I just thought it was a fascinating description of how Abyssal Persecutor can potentially make some things really confusing now. So we'll pull it in. So go read it. You'll get the exact wording of what Conley said. I mean, not doing anything malicious, but he just said, hey, you know, you lost the game because you didn't pay that cost. You know, this was not being misrepresented. Nobody realized, could not remember about the Abyssal Persecutor, that it was in there, making so he can't lose the game. And they go through more discussion where, as they're talking, where Conley likely would have won that game anyways, just with his kind of board position at that time.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
So, but again, Grand Prix Houston extended. Congratulations to everybody that played. And I also like that Conley also had a deck tech for his blue light black deck, and it was called Guess Who, because it had Ninjas of the Deep Hours and some, you know, kind of cool creature choices.
Oh, Ninja of the Deep Powers and Universal Persecutor. That's so sweet.
Oh yeah, it had so many cards that did well with being bounced. It was exceptional.
Wow. That's some nice tech there.
And Eric, I'm going to let you attempt to explain to me the next one on the list about regions, because my mind is already starting to hurt even just contemplating this.
Okay, so where would someone go to find out information about things like regionals? Why, nowhere else besides the Star Kingdom Post.
Who?
The Star Kingdom Post.
Shit, just kidding. You what? I've never stolen news off that. What? No.
It's not stealing. You may read it somewhere else first.
Which is still the most fitting tagline for this podcast I could ever imagine.
Yeah. So Bill Stark and the Star Kingdom Post, and this is pretty much the only piece of news that I was willing to contribute, except Tom already had it on there this week. So, they announced Nationals, where Nationals is going to be, but then they've, at the minimum, renamed what regionals are. Regionals used to be the feeders for Nationals. Now they're either still calling it regionals or have renamed it to National Qualifiers because they're qualifiers for Nationals. So that would make sense, right? Now, the way regionals worked is that there are either 4 or 8 qualifications for Nationals depending on player turnout wherever each regional was held. And, there was less than one estate. So you have, like, Ohio usually had one, which is usually huge. That was, like, usually the Midwest regionals and so forth. So either 4 or 8 people qualify. So if it's a 4-person qualification, they cut the top 8 and then have single elimination. Everyone else qualifies. If it's 8 qualifications, then they cut to top 8, and whoever's in top 8 qualifies. Now, in, I believe it was Maine, there was an announcement made at a recent PTQ. Yeah, it was in Maine. That they're going to have national qualifiers are going to replace regionals. According to the announcement, qualifications would be allocated by player population within a state. So the example that was given in the PTQ was California would receive 8 slots and Maine would receive 2. So there's several sites that are either advertising for either national qualifiers or regionals in some places.
And that's where the confusion's really coming from.
Yeah. Some of them are saying how many slots that they're offering up. So
It works for democracy, Eric. It works for democracy. The number of spots for population.
Yeah. So that's kind of the hubbub around that.
But this does screw over North Dakota, so I am in the end angry with this decision if it's actually true. So that means there'll be zero spots for North Dakota will be going.
That was it for regionals for me.
So the next thing so we talked about Grand Prix Houston, we talked about our potential regional changes. Our next big thing is we have this newly announced Wizards Play Network Championships. And there's been some sort of positive and also negative thoughts on this. So this would be a Wizards Play Network Championship. This will be for Pro Tour San Juan. So these championships are free to enter. And the only way to really be involved in this is by playing in Wizards Play Network events, which potentially or hopefully should be through your local card store. And these will be given at select WPN locations in North and South America. So this is pretty cool. This is one of the first times where they really opened up these special events to people outside of North America / United States. So I think that's pretty important. And this will be open in April and May. The format for the championship will be standard, and the winner will get a free trip to Pro Tour Amsterdam. In addition, the tournament organizer of the qualifying player will also win a trip to the Pro Tour, I'm guessing the motivation for them to actually try to put together these special WPN championship qualifier events. The interesting thing, though, is that there's no travel expenses provided for the qualified players. So what happens if, like, half of them don't go to Puerto Rico?
Well, they probably think that's most likely. Or, if you're maybe you're a really large retail establishment that is going to pay for flight or something. I don't know.
I mean, what are your thoughts, Eric? I mean, I don't play a ton of official formatted F&Ms or WPN events. Do you think this is cool about allowing potentially that local player to get an option to go to Pro Tour San Juan? It can't hurt.
Here's the thing: if you could make it and you got queued for a tournament there that would win you a flight to the next Pro Tour, wouldn't give you an invite to it, but would give you transportation there or whatever.
That'd be pretty cool. If you were already qualified for Amsterdam, but hadn't won like a PTQ, so you didn't have a flight, I could see some big incentive to go to San Juan. So, you know, it'd be interesting. I'm curious to see how many different WPN sites go ahead and participate in this. I think that'll be the true telling sign of whether or not it's worth doing, is how many folks hold qualifiers for it and what percentage of those folks show up for it.
And you have a good point. We don't really know how many of these selected WPN locations are going to be there. You know, if there's only like 10 of them, then it's a little crazy. But if there's one in maybe all 50 states and all the countries in South America and all over Canada, then that could be kind of wild and pretty crazy.
Yeah, and my guess is it definitely is going to be, you know, is at least one per state. You know, I think the level that of WPN, you know, that they're looking at is a really good a higher up level. So, you know, someone who runs a lot of events.
So there you go. If you are a local WPN player, you might be able to win a chance to go to Pro Tour San Juan and hang out with Conley Woods. And go irritate him. Just keep asking for his deck list like 100 times. You know, put on different disguises. Just irritate him and see what he does.
Yeah, you did not hear that from me.
No, that was from Tom. You can tell him that. The last thing I have, I did want to give kudos to Evan Irwin for one of the better April Fool's articles. He had the spoiler list for the From the Vault Relic set. And overall, it was somewhat believable. Then there are some very interesting choices. Like, I think Lodestone Bobbled was on there, and also Ornithopter. But this one actually made it pretty far before people said, oh, wait a minute, it's April 1st. We should not believe anything we see.
On March 31st, I stayed up for him to post that. And I watched it, and I was like, oh, wow, that's... I bought it hook, line, and sinker. I'm not ashamed to admit it. And then the next day, I got up and realized someone tweeted, it's April 1st, don't believe anything you see on the internet. And then I started thinking. I was like, oh. And then I saw someone tweet about the anagram, the last artifact that he put in there, which was supposed to be from Scars of Mirrodin, was an anagram that basically said April Fools.
Yeah.
So.
And Bill Stark from the Starkington Post also was pretty cool when he had the SharkingtonPost.com, had the different logo.
That was cool. You know, going in with Evan on this was, I think, Mana Nation. Mana Nation posted up an article with the same information.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'm not sure if they put it up. If when they put the article up, it had a disclaimer about the fact that it was an April Fool's joke, or if that got put in after the fact.
Because you have to be careful, because people can get, and we all know Magic players can get incredibly pissy when we feel like we've been jerked around a little bit. I hope they put that on their initials. I can see people getting really angry and saying, like, well, I pre-ordered it because I saw the list, and now it's not true. And made my mom cry.
Well, look, if you're going to pre-order this thing, you did it as soon as their reserve list information came out and you saw the cards that they're going to put in on there that are still on the reserve list.
Or maybe people canceled theirs because they didn't want an Ornithopter. What about that?
I doubt it. You want it for Mox Diamond. You could care less if there's an Ornithopter in there.
Good point. I would love to see an Ornithopter just totally blinged out with just amazing new art. That I would like to see. Yeah, I don't care who you put on there. Put Mark Rosewater on the art. I would like to see that.
That wraps up our Magic news, doesn't it?
It does. And I was talking to Eric before the show here. I actually have been dabbling in Magic the Gathering online a little bit. So I've been bothering the card hoarder guys again because I've been ordering some cards. And really, this is in preparation for my excitement for Rise of the Eldrazi. I love, in some ways, one-trick pony decks, so Polymorph has been providing me a lot of entertainment in the casual room of MTGO. And I'm still amazed at how many Jund decks I run into when I'm playing in the casual room of MTGO for Standard.
It's cheap to put together.
It is. It is a pretty good deck, and it's fun matchups with that. And also playing Ad Nauseam with the Death Shadow, you know, Goblin Guides, all these kind of inexpensive rares. There's a similar deck mentioned in Building on a Budget on the Mothership site. This was a deck, in a lot of ways, was very similar to that one. But it's a fun deck to play. You play Ad Nauseam, you're hopefully going to draw 5 to 6 cards and lose at most 5 to 10 life, and then just steamroll your opponent with these monster Death Shadow. Very, very fun deck if you haven't checked it out. What about for you, Eric?
Nothing.
Nothing. I've actually started getting my cards out ready for my Emrakul General EDH deck. I already have like the lands out, and I'm starting to put it all together.
Yeah, I guess the thing I'm trying to figure out is how if I can get up to your neck of the woods for Nationals.
Yeah, August 21st, if I remember correctly.
It is August 21st. And, you know, someone had told me that last time Southwest had run one of their airline fares sales that you could get one-way tickets for like $39. So I've started to monitor Southwest to see if that comes up again. If that's the case, I may need to try to do some convincing of the old wife here, and she's generally pretty cool about these things, but we'll see.
Yeah, we could probably figure out some sort of a living situation, because I'm pretty sure Conley does not trust me enough to actually stay in my place.
Probably not. And so having some place to sack out would definitely make it a plus.
And you can ask Derek, who used to be one of the hosts of the show. He did stay over here at my place when he came down for tournament, and he survived. He's not emotionally scarred in any fashion. We actually sent one of his friends that came with him and gave them a free television set. I can't promise we'll give you a free gift of some sort, but he did go home with the TV.
Yeah, if I brought a TV home, I might get in trouble.
This was because my wife Holly's usually kind of listening as I do this show, and all of a sudden I was talking to Derek after, so yeah, Derek, you and your friends can stay with us when you come down. Also, I was just like, whoo, you know, hear the sound barrier being broken. She's like, who are these people?
Like, yeah.
Tom, the rape factor, are you worried at all? I'm like, no, I think they should be more scared of me probably than I should be of them. And it turned out fine. We stayed up until like 4 in the morning playing Wii, but still, it was a good time had by all.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Eric, you ready for some listener emails?
I am ready for some listener emails.
All righty. So you can email us if you like us or hate us. We'll take either one. I am pitimp@mtgcast.com. Eric, where should they send you and their various Rule 34 findings?
No Rule 34 findings, thank you. I am Eric, eric@mtgcast.com.
Right, heading us off this week is John M. He thinks it would be fun for us to have an IRC chat channel or a chat box on the MTGCast main page so people could chat with us maybe while doing the show or just chat with other listeners. He also wanted us as hosts of Monday Night Magic to pick our favorite Magic the Creature, or what is our favorite creature card in Magic the Gathering. Mine, I have a legal and then basically a non-tourney legal choice. You can probably guess one of the two.
Yeah, the first thing that came to my mind... So I reserve the right to change this, but Eternal Dragon, it's a pretty sweet card. I love the whole plane cycling and able to get it back, and so that's all some pretty good stuff there.
That's a good choice. My tourney favorite, obviously, would probably be Pitimp. It's my email address. It's one of my favorite magic creatures of all time. But if you actually had to have me pin me down and say, if I could go to Desert Island, I could only take one creature card with me, it would be my Fruitcake Elemental. That is one of the coolest creature cards I've ever seen made by Wizards. Let's see. And so if you, the listeners, have any favorites, email them to us, and we'll probably read a bunch of these on the next show. So let us know about them. Let's see. Sev writes in. He wanted to look, this is really cool. He was tickling my movie buff inner self right now with this one. We talked to Chris Otwell, let us know about a lot of the Dungeons & Dragons movies. We were talking about the Magic the Gathering movie that may be made. He said there's actually another Dungeons & Dragons movie. It was originally called The Dragons of Krull. But right before it was released, they lost the D&D license. So they released the name under just the name Krull. And I have actually seen the movie Krull. This came out in 1983. It had no dragons in it, but there was this like big black fortress, and it went through space and different dimensions. The enemies used like laser weapons. The lady that he had to be rescuing, she had pyrokinetic powers. And the band of heroes had a person named Urgo the Magnificent, short in stature, large in power, narrow of purpose, and wide of vision.
Was Krull the one with that weapon that like spun around? You threw it for like a boomerang and it chopped
things
up?
Yes, you have seen this movie as well. And like you probably even remember the VHS movie box had like this big mount with like kind of an evil face on it, and it showed the guy holding that like rotating ninja star like weapon that he had.
Oh yeah, I remember that movie. I did not realize this was a B movie.
And also, Jeremy Irons makes an appearance as the as one of the main people. So he's desperately trying to outact his own eyebrows is what Sev writes in. So, Sev, thank you. We also want to let us know that Cartamundi has been printing Magic since the very beginning. But as far as we understand, they are not the exclusive printer anymore for Magic, which is not a big surprise. It seems that would be an awful lot for one company to do.
And isn't it also to do with like locations? Like they had different printers like in Europe?
Oh, yeah, probably now that it's truly an international game and how many different languages, it would make sense that they'd want a printer in that locale so you're not shipping crates of paper across the ocean, which they probably still do.
It used to be, I think, that there was a different collation for where you're going to receive your rare depending on where it was printed.
Oh, that could, it would make sense depending on how they laid out the sheets.
Yeah.
Let's see. Next, Greg Hollywood, who is one of the best names I've heard besides I know someone who's named Johnny Canada, which is the best name I've ever heard of in my life. So he wrote with experience. He emailed me. He's a new listener to the show, and he discovered Magic by purchasing Duels of the Planeswalkers through his Xbox 360. So he really wanted to say that, Colin and I had talked about this about a month ago, and we had some negative, positive things to say about it. He overall was very positive. He said, browse an Xbox Live Arcade, stumbled upon this, purchased it, and this has now got him into paper Magic, and he's now a very avid player. So he just wanted to kind of give props to Duels of the Planeswalker for being a really good introduction about learning the rules of the game, getting some experience playing against the AI characters, and I'm assuming this is what Wizards of the Coast wanted, be a portal to playing paper Magic. So there you go, Wizards. Greg Hollywood is now addicted because of Duels of the Planeswalkers. Let's awesome. See. Yeah, so I thought that was a very cool story. And Greg Hollywood is just an awesome name. Ken from Singapore, he writes in. He wanted to highlight his two favorite cards were Realms Uncharted and Explosive Revelation. And seeing these two, he was wondering if Wizards had this sort of undefined cycle in this set. Realms Uncharted, he says, the green gifts ungiven. Explosive Revelation is a red treasure hunt for damage. Does this mean we can expect a cycle of cards for the other colors? Could be. I don't know. That was a good idea. He said his inner spike is spiked, no pun intended, when he saw Realms Uncharted, while his inner Timmy is going gaga over the Eldrazi gods and the Eldrazi tribal spells. So he's like me, where he is very excited for this set. Next is Ron G. actually wrote, and he found out about us through our Facebook page, which I admit I check about once every 2 years. And he wanted to say that he actually runs this cool community program called GameHearts.org, and they use collectible card games and collectible miniature games to promote adult sobriety from alcohol and, I think, basically other drugs of choice. So instead of, and this is, they're not preaching full abstinence, but they're really providing, instead of on Friday Saturday nights going to the bar, you can go to this, I guess it's not a game store, but this location and play card games with other people. He just wanted me to mention this is GameHearts.org. Go check them out. I'll have a link in the show notes. It sounds like a very cool way of using Magic as a community tool to improve your local town. So I like to mention good projects.
I do have to say, it sounds like you're replacing addiction to substances that can be very harmful to you to addiction to cardboard.
Yes. And the cool thing is that I think they actually thought about this. Is the way this thing is set up is that people aren't buying cards, but they have all the cards are there, and you get like an initial starter deck, you get like an initial pool of cards. Then as you basically participate more, you get then more cards to use in your pool. So hopefully not triggering the addiction thing where people are wanting to spend more money or things like that, but they're, I guess, getting you addicted to being to sobriety by being in this program. So I think they actually thought about it a little bit, which I thought was fascinating.
So sounds like a good deal.
So Ranji, there you go. Aaron M., he sent in a very well thought out and very long email with his thoughts about the reserve list, so I appreciate that. And he had some specific things in that. We actually brought this up in episode 200 where we were worried about the original dual lands. This was in response to, we had a very good call-in about, well, what's the idea of potentially doing like a functional reprint as a way to, quote, get around the reserve list changes. He has some very good thoughts to this. Fortunately, it's pretty long. He said, some options would be create new version of the dual lands that have some minor or easily avoided drawback. What other options? Create new version of the duels are actually better than the originals. Then you're going to sell more, and you may still piss off the secondary market, but you're at least not cannibalizing the existing cards. And also, the most interesting is add a new card type, something like Legacy, where it'd be a Legacy Land-Island Swamp. So technically, it's a new card. It's only going to be playing Legacy, and it's right there on the card for you. I thought that was a really unique thought of how to fix this problem.
And once again, I'm going to say that, yes, if they want to get around the rule and, bend space and time to make reprints, they could. But if they're going to do that, they're just going to get rid of the reserve list. Hey, for more thought of my thoughts on the reserve list, you should check out Mr. Suitcase number 13. I have a... What's that?
I said, bam, you're good.
Yeah, where I have an open letter to Wizards of the Coast with my thoughts on the reserve list.
And you already had some responses to it. So it was I listened to it, and I liked it. And I just like how much discussion this has generated. I know people, a lot of ways, have feel like this has been thoroughly discussed by this point, but it's still amazing to see how divided people are around this change.
I think that's another reason why I put up my open letter and a podcast, whereas I can go ahead and just say, yeah, for my thoughts on this, go ahead and check out that. And I'm hoping that some folks at Wizards will read it and let us know something.
Let's see. Next, Mike B. from Connecticut. He has a B-movie recommendation for me called Shark Attack 3 Megalodon. Says, this is the movie for you if you like bad acting, cheesy effects, unnecessary sex scenes, and you have to see this movie. He also goes as far as to say it has the most absurd pickup line in B-movie history. You'll know it when you see it. And I emailed Mike. This is actually on my Netflix queue right now and is currently being mailed to me. Let's see. Don W., he sent in the EDH combo of, I mentioned earlier, Emrakul and Hall of the Bandit Lord. That's a good one. Isaac R., who has actually come and played with, we met him at the GP in Minneapolis. He's actually now coming to our local playgroup that we do once or twice a month. So it's pretty awesome.
Awesome.
So Isaac sent in about a blog that his friend does that reviews bad movies. And this is videoupdates.net. So go check that out. He definitely reviews movies that are right up my alley. Andrew B. has, or excuse me, Clancy has another B-movie recommendation called Brain Damage. This one is not even available through Netflix on DVD. That's how bad this movie is. It is about a wisecracking snake-like alien thing. Awesomely bad. That's really all I know about it. Andrew B. has a B-movie recommendation of, and I've seen this, Ice Cream Man. This is basically, it's like a horror movie where the ice cream man is like a serial killer and he like makes like human head ice cream cone scoopers and does all this other dumb stuff. And there's one scene, and the bad guy is actually played by Clint Howard. And you know how creepy he looks. So imagine him being like a killer ice cream man. And you won't sleep for like a week. He's actually in a number of B-horror movies. Ron Howard is famous. You know, he's this big director. Clint Howard truly practices his craft as a B-movie horror actor. So I have to give him credit for that. Let's see.
See, you know, Tom, with your love of the B-movie, I have to go find the... there's a role-playing game where you role-play actors and directors and so forth in B-movies.
Really?
And yeah, and now part of the whole role-playing game is that these people are, the set is so cheap and the production is so cheap that they can't use special effects for the monsters, so they have to get real monsters.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I mean, part of the thing is your character trying to survive the film because they're using real monsters, so they might really kill you. So
sweet.
There's all kinds of things where, like, you can, at any time, someone can storm off the set, you know, and demand some stuff. And yeah, so that is, I have a copy of it somewhere. I have to go dig it out so I can look up to see what it is. And if I do fly up for nationals, I have to bring it up with me.
Yeah, just a quick, apparently there was something called Scared Stiff, the B-movie horror role-playing game. I think this is what you're talking about. So I think it's called Scared Stiff.
That does not sound like the one that I had. There may be one that was ahead of that. Anyway, yeah, the same same gist.
We'll have them both, and we'll play them. We'll see which one we like better. Let's see. Aku, he sent in a very cool screen capture of the front page of YouTube.com where for a brief period, the Magic TV show from Channel Fireball was right there on the front main page of YouTube. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Awesome.
And last but not least, this email actually basically just came in. This is Eric from Japan. He's been listening since episode 100. Due to popular request, he translated the Magic Chandra Nalar manga, and he just wanted us to spread the word so people want to check it out. So the quick URL is bit.ly/magicmanga1. He just said if you can mention that in the link, that would be wonderful. There you go. You're welcome.
Woo!
That is the end of emails I have, Eric. Any that you wanted to mention? We had a ton.
No, I did get some emails on my recent new podcast, Mr. Suitcase Number 13, Open Letter to Wizards. And I've been replying to those via email and stuff. Some folks definitely have some thoughts on the reserve list and stuff that's going on with that. So go ahead and give that a listen if you haven't. And unusual for me is that I want you to actually read the show notes. Normally my show notes are just kind of a blurb about whoever I'm talking with or something else and not that important. But this time the main content's there in the show notes, and then I talk a little bit more about it in the podcast.
You know what that means, Eric? That you actually have to make a Magic Mr. Suitcase number 14.
Yes.
M11, the big change.
No, I think next up on my Mr. Suitcase is either going to be the Rise of the Eldrazi pre-release, or it's going to be what's in my RSS reader.
That would actually be interesting because you are the fountain of all news items a lot of times. Each week, there'll be like two items on the show notes. You'll swoop in. All of a sudden, there's like 35 items.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not just going to go with the sites because I think if you've listened to this enough, you can kind of pick up some of the sites. But you know, I also talk about like some of the authors on those sites that I like and what I like or don't like about different things. You know, I'm not planning on going in and bashing anybody, but just kind of giving my thoughts on things versus my taste. So it's on my agenda, things to do. I just need to sit down with the podcast, you know, recording stuff and my list here and have free time. It's that third bit that's the troublesome part.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So we're almost at the end of the show, and I really want to get to my B-movie, or our movie talk. So MTG Cast News, nothing too major. We're excited for Minneapolis Nationals coming up here pretty soon. I did want to say our World Wake Booster Pack giveaway is going to be rounding up. This is the last week to enter, so as of episode 202, that will be closed, and we'll announce the winners on episode 203. And if you haven't entered yet, this is the contest where you have to pick an actor or an actress and which Planeswalker they would play and why in the upcoming Magic the Gathering movie. So this is your last week to enter. Then we'll be giving out 12 prize packs of 3 booster packs apiece. And, well, we already mentioned Mr. Suitcase number 13. And also, I was on the StarkingtonPost.com, and I see that Yo! MTG Taps is now being featured on that website as well, which I thought was pretty good. I don't know if you caught that on the right-hand side.
I did see them there. Seeing as I got here like 5 minutes before we're going to start recording, I kind of trimmed down some of the things I was going to put on my on the show notes. So sorry, Joe and Big Head Joe. Thankfully, Todd was there to pick up. Tom was there to pick up the slack.
thanks, Jim. I'm going to call you Jim now.
I think it's because there's.
Oh, I'll call you Aaron. How about that? That's close enough. Thanks, Aaron.
Isn't there a band called Big Head Todd?
I have no idea. I just know how Joe and Big Head Joe are two incredibly cool guys after staying with them in New York City for Worlds. And they do a great podcast. Definitely listen to them. I'm glad they're being recognized and showing up on other sites as well. So that's the whole point of MTG Cast, is to give people a start and then have them leave me like an unloving child and go off to bigger and better things.
Well, the good thing about the Starking and Post hosting them is that they're not leaving us either.
Yeah, good point. Does he pay anybody either? I don't know.
No, he doesn't.
He's with me. We're also cheapskates. There we go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and so maybe this is a great time to put the word out again. You know, if you're thinking about doing a podcast, you know, so long as you're willing to record it and edit it, both of those steps.
yes.
We're willing to host it. And when I say we, I really mean mostly Tom and Chris. Chris Otwell, who does a lot of the behind-the-scenes posting, assuming his computer's back up and running. We are a site that's willing to make your content available. You know, actually, I saw a tweet from Mike Flores where someone was asking him where to get some starter articles published, and he recommended MTGcast.
Oh, yes. So, we will definitely put it up, even make PDFs available.
So that's pretty cool. It's a great service. So if you want to write or if you want to put a podcast, you know, we're a place where you can get that information up.
Yeah, because if you're even thinking about it, send me an email, pinandpinmtgcast.com, and I should be able to answer your quick questions. These days, it is very inexpensive to record your own podcast. All the software is free. There's programs that will automatically level the sound. It is really a good time to get into it.
It's wonderful. And, I mean, Tom certainly does help because when I started, I emailed Tom and I actually emailed Ron Vitale of the Magic Sock and asked them about, what they used to record and how they go about it. And Tom was kind enough to go tell me, how to kind of level out some of your sounds and stuff like that. And so there's definitely stuff that we're willing to help you out with. And if you need some help on the audio side, I use Audacity for my stuff, and you want to know kind of some of the stuff to do with that, I'm more than happy to share with you the things I've found to try to make my sound quality and better stuff too. Because don't let the like first episodes of JudgeCast and some of the more recent startups scare you off. you know, the fact that these guys have some awesome quality audio to start off with. Most of the time, your first podcast is going to sound like crap, and that's okay. People usually come back to listen to the second one, and you know, by three or four, you actually kind of get into a role and kind of understand how to make things sound good and or at least palatable a little bit, and it's all that kind of good stuff.
All right, Eric, we're talking about movies now. So if you are not a movie buff, Magic listeners, you can turn it off now. Otherwise, we're going to be talking about two movies. So, Eric, you sounds like you've actually seen my B-movie recommendation, or almost a C-movie. I would have to say that's how bad this movie actually is when you watch it again. It's The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. Trying to summarize the story of this movie is actually very difficult, because it doesn't make really any sense at all. But when you actually pull this up on IMDb, this movie was star-studded. There are a lot of actors that you know of now and have actually done a lot of things. So let me tell you the story, and then we'll tell you about the actors that showed up in this absolute turd burger. So we have the neurosurgeon slash rock star slash superhero named Buckaroo. He's perfected the oscillator overthruster, which is like this special engine he puts basically on a car that allows him to travel through solid matter by using the eighth dimension. Unfortunately, this attracts the attention of the red lectroids from Planet 10, and every single one of them is named John, and they're after this device for their own evil ends. And it's up to Buckaroo and his band, which is he has a crime-fighting team called the Hong Kong Cavaliers, and it's their job to stop them. He is helped out by the female lead, Penny Pretty, who is a dead ringer for his late wife. And there's also some helpful extraterrestrial beings extra-dimensional beings who look and talk like they are from Jamaica. I am not kidding. That is the actual premise of this movie. But who actually plays Buckaroo Banzai in this movie? Peter Weller. So RoboCop. That is Buckaroo. Also starring in this movie of Jeff Goldblum, John Lithgow, and Christopher Lloyd. That is a lot of actually fairly big actors were in this movie.
It is a very incredible cast when you come back and look at it.
So it's definitely worth watching, if nothing else, to see when they're filming this movie, basically putting a rocket engine on a car and like shooting it into a mountain, and all of a sudden they start traveling through solid matter. It's very, very interesting. It's worth an hour and a half of your time. Check it out. The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension. And then, Eric, I also said I was going to try to convince you that Hot Tub Time Machine is worth watching. And so my first question, Eric, is did you like the movie Back to the Future?
Yes, I did.
Then you will like Hot Tub Time Machine. The people that made this movie obviously have a huge movie boner for Back to the Future. There are numerous homages to this movie, some of the Karate Kid movies, including Karate Kid 3, that's half the fun. And where this starts is the entire premise of the movie is very similar to Back to the Future. And there's actually a ongoing cameo by Crispin Glover, who plays Marty McFly's dad when he goes back into the future in the first movie. So Crispin Glover's all over this movie. And it's got a little bit of that bro humor that we've had in a lot of the more recent movies. But overall, I thought it was fantastic.
I see, bro humor never really gets me going. Maybe I'm just a hater, I don't know. But your comparison to Back to the Future now has made me go, this does sound good. Because those are one of those movies that when they're on the movie channels, you know, I'll stop and watch them. I'll put them on. It's just, you can't help it.
I think I watched this in the theater. I don't think you'd want to do that. But if there's any way you can get this movie at some time in the future, I believe you would really enjoy it if you have any fond reminiscence of Back to the Future.
I do, and you've sold me.
Sweet. That was my job. Eric, we're to the end of the show. Everybody suffered through my movie recommendations. We love to get emails. Hopefully you enjoyed this show. Eric?
Hey, before you end.
Oh, how dare you.
I'm being the anti-Eric. The clock has turned to the new day for Magic the Gathering spoilers.
There's probably like 300 new cards now up on the spoiler list.
Well, I'm not actually looking at the spoiler list. I am looking at Mark Rosewater's article for today, and I want to hit you with Echo Mage.
Ooh,
Echo Mage is 1 and 2 blue for a creature human wizard. He's a 2/3. He has level up 1 and a blue, so a 2/3 for 3 mana. Not too horrible for a blue creature. He's a rare at levels 2 and 3. He has blue, tap, copy, target instant or sorcery spell. You may choose new targets for the copy. And he's a 2/4.
So he's like a twin cast with legs, basically.
Yeah. And then level 4+, 2 blue, tap, copy, target instant or sorcery spell twice. You may choose new targets for the copies. Emphasis on twice, all mine. And he's a 2/5.
Now, this is something, Eric, when, and this would go for any of the level of creatures, when he gets to the level 4 plus, does he still keep the level 2 to 3 ability, or is it solely only the one that's on the level 4 plus line?
It's only level 4.
Okay.
So once he's level 4, you have to copy it twice.
Copy it, okay. Which you probably want to be doing anyways.
Yeah, and here's the thing. So the only time you really want to only copy it once is maybe if you're copying a counter spell or something, right? So copying it twice is no big deal either. You know, you just do the same thing again.
No, that's pretty cool. That's what happens when you record on Sunday nights, which is for lifestyle choices. But no, Echo Mage sounds cool. The only bad thing about level up creatures, trying to discuss these like verbally, is it's hard to pay attention long enough to remember all the things about these cards. So like, yeah. Okay, it was what's the original casting cost, and it's level up cost, and now level 2 to, you're like, ah, okay, I'll just have to look at the card.
Yeah, I mean, he costs 2 to level up. He's a 3 casting cost, and he twin casts at levels 2 and 3 and double twin casts at level 4 plus.
There we go. No, that's cool.
There's a shorthand version, yeah.
That, yeah. Twin cast with legs or double twin cast with legs. I like it. If I pay 300 mana, he can copy stuff twice. I got it.
And I did that just for you, MTG Cast listeners, because normally I like to read through the Morrow articles, you know, and get to it. And this one's way down towards the bottom, so.
Yeah, which he knows that everybody just scrolls. As soon as you open it, you just scroll down. It could just be like all expletives on there. And be like, argh.
I used to just scroll, but now I usually actually read the article and get to it when he wants you to. Because, you know, I have to say that I get much more excited by spoiler season now that Wizards has put the clamps down than I used to. You know, it used to be by the time the pre-release got here, I knew the full set for a week or so, and in my anticipation and my excitement for playing it for the first time was damped down a little bit.
And also in the
not so much.
And the Magic Arcana also for Monday, they have all the token cards that are going to be at for Rise of the Eldrazi, which are pretty nice looking. Of course, they have the Ooze token because there's Gelatinous Genesis, and there's going to be 3 different Eldrazi spawn tokens. Have you ever played the game Metroid? One of them looks just like a Metroid. So very exciting. Eric, my voice is actually starting to get hoarse a little bit. That's how long we've been doing this show.
Yeah, well, I give you permission, Tom. You can definitely end the show.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you. So thank you, everybody. Give us an email. I am pitimp@mtgcast.com. Eric is eric@mtgcast.com. Thank you for listening. I can't believe if anybody's been listening for 200-some episodes. That's absolutely incredible to me. I'm glad you keep coming back each and every week. If we didn't get listeners, we probably wouldn't do the show. I do the movie podcast I do, and we don't get any listeners for that, but still. We appreciate you listening. It's a lot of fun. We like being part of the whole Magic community. We appreciate that.
Oh, my word. What could that be?